Welcome to the Jimbo Podcast, where you can find all your favorite Jimbo Show content in one place. Interviews, prank calls, bits, and a whole lot more. And now, here's your host, Jimbo.
We have a filmmaker in the building, probably the one, I think, the most celebrated filmmaker in town right now for the Viva Texas Film Festival here in Victoria all weekend long. We have Joshua Schultz. Now, you got your movie Americana. But before we get there, Joshua, tell me how you got into this whole thing, making movies, picking up your camera, because you started off as a photographer, right?
Yeah. Actually, it's weird. The origin story of that is crazy. So I was working in business, and I wasn't happy. I wanted to become an artist. And so I quit, lost all my money, kind of started over. And someone had told me, like, fake it till you make it. So I happened to meet this great director, and I lied to him, and I told him I was the best producer in town. So then he hired me for my first thing, which was an Incubus music video.
Oh, wow.
So I did this music video for Brandon Boyd for like a solo project. And I ended up saving them a lot of money. And like, I just kind of learned on the fly. And the biggest lesson I learned from that was, it's not fake it till you make it. It's always deliver.
Yeah.
So if you get yourself into a situation, you need to really learn how to do it well and then do it better than anybody else. And then they'll keep hiring you. So if you just get yourself, because I've had it now where people will fake it till they make it with me, and then they don't deliver, and I'm like, I get what you're doing, but
yeah,
you still got to get things
done. The concept, you just need the execution to be better, right?
Right. So a week later, that same director called me, and he's like, hey, I lost a camera guy. I got to shoot this documentary for a band called Band of Horses. We're going to go to Big Sur, and we're going to shoot it with one of the Beach Boys at the Beach Boys studio.
Yeah.
And so we drove to Big Sur. He's like, I was like, you know, I've never touched the camera. And he's like, don't worry, I'll teach you. Doesn't teach me. We get into the Beach Boys studio, and he shows me how to turn it on and off and like hit record and focus, and then he walks away. And then Al Jardine from the Beach Boys walks over.
Yeah.
And I'm still like in awe. Like the Red Hot Chili Peppers were leaving because they just recorded an album. Here's a Beach Boy. Everywhere is like pictures of the Beatles and like all this memorabilia. And then he gives me this camera. And then this Beach Boy walks over and he's like, oh, you know, that I heard that's the blah, blah camera. It's, you know, what's the difference between that and this? And I have no idea what he's talking about. So I just kind of started BSing him.
Yeah.
And my friend saw that I was BSing one of the Beach Boys. So he took a photo of me with my camera. Just, and then he finally just grabbed the Beach Boy and went away. And I was like, thank God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we spent the next 4 days filming this documentary, and it was like almost a spiritual experience, because where we were, there's no cell phone reception. There's no internet.
Oh, wow.
It's just you and this beautiful scenery with like a Beach Boy, and Band of Horses is an incredible band.
Yeah.
And they were incredibly friendly. And every other camera guy was like Justin Bieber's guy, Paul McCartney's guy. Some other guy was some award winning, and then this dude. And the whole time I was like sweating bullets, just hoping that I wasn't found out, you know, that like I can still do this. And I think the pressure, and because I was around so much inspiration and everyone was so friendly, we wrapped the project. I went back to LA, and a week later I get a call from the director, and I'm like, all right, this is it. Like, he's like, you're canned. Like, we figured it out. You're an imposter. Anyway, so he calls me and he's like, all right, man, I just looked at all the footage and I got to tell you something. You got something that, you know, you can't learn. You have this eye. You're an incredible artist. He's like, I could tell technically you don't know what you're doing, but as an artist, you have this incredible billing that I rarely see. And I think you should pursue this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, holy cow. And so there was a buddy of mine, this guy named Tyler Hines. I was living with him, and he had just bought this new camera. And it's funny because this was like 12 years ago. So the new 7D Canon was like this huge phenomenon. You could take photos and video, and we were like, whoa, what is this thing? And he lent it to me, and I was dating this girl at the time who was a model, so she asked me to photograph her. And so I did this photo shoot at the Observatory in Hollywood, and I made so many mistakes that people assumed were this master genius artistic.
Your artistic decisions were your mistakes.
Yeah, basically. They were like, you're so bold for doing these things. And I was like, I know.
Very bold.
So from that, I ended up booking, Instagram wasn't around, so I put it on Facebook, and I ended up booking like 60 paid shoots from it.
Yeah.
And I just started this formula of like, if someone said, can you do this? I said, yes. And then I'd go learn how to do it and practice it over and over again. So by the time I showed up on set, I knew how to do it. So I started shooting some people, and some actors started noticing. There was a couple of big CW shows at the time. So one of the stars hit me up, and she was on her way to do this photo shoot with a very famous photographer, but she stopped to do a 20-minute shoot with me. We just shot for 20 minutes in Hollywood Hills, and then she went to this like 7-hour shoot, you know, $30,000 shoot.
Yeah.
Hated that shoot, loved my shoot, and those shoots kind of blew up, and so she emailed the whole cast and was like, you got to shoot with this guy. And all of a sudden, all these celebrities and publicists started hitting me up, and next thing I know, I was, you know, shooting Imagine Dragons for Rolling Stones.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Paramore.
And how does that all come about? So you, that's just all word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just getting these. You don't have an official kind of agent like booking you. It's just kind of word of mouth, like,
yeah.
Do it with this guy.
Never had an agent. My philosophy was just, because I've met guys who want to be photographers and they never shoot. My philosophy was like, I'm just going to shoot all the time because I'm so madly in love with it.
Yeah.
And always trying to make that shoot the best photo shoot I've ever done. And just that quality and constantly promoting it, people started noticing. Yeah. And they want to work with somebody who's going to make them look good or make cool stuff. And I shot a band. I shot this, my first major celebrity shoot for a magazine was this guy named Peter Facinelli, who was in Twilight.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who, ironically, we're now best friends. we weren't best friends until like a couple years ago, but he was like the first big shoot. And I was so nervous during the shoot. There's a video online of the shoot. I'm profusely sweating the entire time because I was trying all these things I'd never tried before. And we ended up killing it. And on his website, it was just my photos. We got published a lot. And so then magazines started reaching out, and I don't remember who the first big band was, but I remember Imagine Dragons was fun because they were so great as people.
Yeah.
And my first interview I did, because I also would interview for music magazines, I did an interview for Paramore.
Yeah.
And I remember telling Haley, it was my first time interviewing for magazines, so she drew a mural for me.
Oh, wow.
And put my website, and then she gave me a big hug and told me she loved me, and then I got to take some photos of them, and it was like, here's this person I used to have a crush on.
Yeah.
And she was just such an amazing human.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I started learning some hard lessons. Like, there's this phenomena that happens when you're an artist where when you blow up and you get a lot of attention, you get a lot of attacks.
Yeah,
and I was kind of naive to that. So I remember when I started getting a lot of attention, and then these attacks would come in. It's like, why would you want to hurt me? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm just making art and trying to make people happy. And so I went through this sort of like learning curve of what it means to be an artist and how you have to manage yourself and why people attack you. Which my best analogy is there's this thing called crab theory. So if if you have a boiling pot of crabs and one crab's about to get out, all the crabs will pull them down.
Pull them back down.
So that's sort of whenever I'm getting like attacked, it means that I'm working hard enough and I'm getting attention, because there's a lot of amazing people in the world and there's a small percentage of not so amazing people.
So the jealousy puts in. I mean, that's in any kind of like business. I mean, once you kind of get to that level of like, I don't care, not everybody has to like me. That's on radio when I first started. It's like, why? I don't, I had a great show. Why don't people, you know, you kind of question yourself.
Because you're succeeding. Yeah,
yeah. Once you get that level and you just, you know, and I'm thinking you're at that level now where you're like, I'm just going to do my thing. And you like it, you don't, you know.
Well, and the great thing, because I was shooting a bunch of celebrities at the time, it gave me the opportunity to tell them what I was going through.
Yeah.
And their stories were always 1,000 times worse than mine. I remember I was talking to this, I was shooting this lead singer of a metal band, and I was like, yeah, you know, this girl, you know, was like, I'm terrible and all this stuff. And I was telling him, and he was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, a few months ago, a fan brought a gun to my concert to kill my wife because she couldn't be with me. And I was like,
wow.
All right. My life's not that bad.
Yeah. So, the love of photography, did that start at like when you were a kid, or that was something later in life after you got done with your corporate world work? Or is that something that you always had in you?
Love of photography happened after that Band of Horses, Beach Boys thing.
So this is like later in life. You're just getting into it. You're not even like as a kid. You don't have a bunch of cameras and you're wanting into it. And then you end up doing corporate stuff. This is kind of, I don't want to say late in life, but something when you're relatively, you're a man.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really pick up a camera until I was 28.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I did do a lot of drawing and painting. So I feel like I kind of built this knowledge of composition and shading without knowing it.
Yeah.
By doing that. Because you have to build a whole world when you sketch. But my dream from when I was a little kid has always been to make movies. So when I was 7, I would build, like, I bought the Industrial Light and Magic book on how to do special effects.
Yes.
And I would build the sets, because back then you didn't have CGI, so...
You had the models and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. And my brother and I would do movie stunts. We'd, like, ride our bikes off buildings and all kinds of crazy stuff. And But I immensely decided that photography was training for filmmaking.
Yeah.
If I can tell a story in one frame, that'll help me as a director. Which leads me to then I transition into directing. And I did the same thing. I went around, I tried to meet with some people to see if they would, let me apprentice or go on set. They saw my success with photography, so they were like, hell no. And so I met a producer, I lied to him, told him I was a great director, and he gave me some money. And I directed a fashion film, and we ended up winning the number one fashion film festival in the world.
Wow.
And then I was watching The Voice, and I remember I was watching this girl sing, and I was like, one day I'd love to do a music video for her. And I'm not kidding. A week later, I got a text from her. She got my number from a friend, and she asked me to direct a music video.
Wow.
So I directed it. It blew up. But it's not all sweetness and light, because then I did a lot of terrible music videos after that.
So what happens when you do a really good one? Do people like just kind of like, hey, I need to turn this one out quickly. Can you get it over? Is that kind of like a factory situation, or was it just bad situations in total?
It was more of a learning curve of like, I didn't understand, because with photography, I did quite a bit of research. I studied film. I learned all the old techniques that made me much better as a photographer. And I shoot a lot of the album covers and bands with like old 60s cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And I only use digital when I have to. But with filmmaking, there's just so much more to it. And I think we have a phenomenon now where I call them the Instagram directors, where they think that they can be a director, and they think if they just tell people what to do that they know how to tell stories. But with filmmaking, there's so much more. There's like 1,000 levels of things that you need to understand, between the obvious, which is what you see, down to story, down to sound and score. And so I'm happy that I was able to kind of make those mistakes in the music videos. And I'm sort of overly ambitious. So whenever I meet someone, I'm like, they're like, oh, we only have $500 for a music video. I'm like, it's okay. We're going to make the greatest music video ever. And then you make all these mistakes.
Yeah.
Or even just like what I found more in music videos was I'd meet an artist and I would write this epic music video and then I would shoot it. And they'd come back and all their notes were like, cool, edit out all the story. Just have a bunch of sexy shots of me. And you're like, but we just built these sets and we did all these things. They're like, I just want to look good.
Yeah.
And so eventually I started realizing, like, it's not my music video. It's their music video. And but, I mean, I had some success. We had, like, 7 music videos go number one in the world. Millions of views, blah, blah, blah. And then I got to work with big crews and great DPs and great cameras.
So you're learning as you're going along. So, like, the next logical step is for you to step out and make a movie. Are you kind of writing your own scripts? Are you writing at this time, or are you kind of like searching for other people's scripts to kind of fit what you can do?
So my first plan was to come up with the story and then get a talented person to write the script. And so for Americana, everything I was doing was really just secretly learning for movies. So by the time it came to do Americana, I came up with the idea. And then I went through 5 scriptwriters who all, unfortunately,
didn't have the same vision?
Yeah, they. I remember there was this guy I was working with, and he was like, I'm an amazing scriptwriter. I just sold this script for $1 million. And so he took my idea, and he rewrote it so that he gets all the women. He's now the star of the film.
Yeah.
Nothing bad happens. He just looks like a cool badass the whole time. And yeah. I was like, that's not...
that's not what I was going for. So let's talk about Americana. That's the big movie that's... is it premiering at the Viva Texas Film Fest?
Yeah. So the first time it's premiering is tomorrow, Victoria, uh-huh. Texas, at the Viva Texas Film Festival. And
and you're the star. Not only you are the director, and I'm sure you do the cinematography also. And you
no. Kinda,
okay. but let's say you are the star riding a motorcycle. And this is, are you like a motorcycle enthusiast, or is this something that came with the role?
I grew up around motorcycles. And there's a lot of things in the story that I took from my life. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm the co-star. It stars me and this girl named Renine Pedro, who's an amazing actress. And my camera guy is incredible. His name's Jared. He killed it. Actually, that was the other thing, too, is I was lucky that by the time I brought on this project, I assembled, like, my Avengers team.
The team is so important. I mean, you could, like, you need that really good assistant director or cinematographer that knows the stuff that you got in your head, but you can't necessarily get it out.
Well, and I felt sorry for him because I've been doing photography so long, and I've also shot many music videos that I was like, this is exactly what I want every frame. This is the lens I want. This is the camera. And he was
the
like...
The trailer's beautiful. I mean, I saw that. I mean, it's the photography and everything is beautiful.
Yeah, he killed it. And I mean, our composer is a 2-time Oscar winner. He won for Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, wow.
And I would send him like samples of songs I like for the film. And I was like, oh, have you seen The Joker? And he's like, oh, they offered me that movie, but I was on another movie. And I'm like, of course they did. And I showed him like I was editing a scene to Johnny Cash, but, you know, until we find the final song. And he was like, oh, I did that album. Because he also he's made like 350 number one songs.
Oh, wow.
He's big in the music world. He's done like Metallica, Linkin Park, Adele, everybody. And his son is Beck, the singer.
Oh, wow.
And then he also happens to compose films and win Oscars for that. And
you were able to get him for your movie.
Just that's, a dream team.
That's great.
And after I showed him the film, I was like nervous, you know? And so I didn't hear from him for 2 days. And then he wrote me this huge letter of like how lucky he was to be a part of the film. And he thinks that, you know, he really believes in me and supports me, and he was so blown away, and I cried a little bit. But we have so many people on the film that are like that, like our actors. We had a friend of mine named Ruby Modine, who stars in Shameless and a bunch of films,
yeah.
And there's a guy named Travis Mills who plays my brother. He's got the top radio show on Apple.
Okay.
Travis Mills Show. He also has a band called Girlfriends that's, you know, Travis Barker, big... Haley Reinhart, American Idol.
Yeah.
We had the metal band The Word Alive gave us 2 songs. Chris's father, who's a famous country singer, donated
yes,
a song for a scene. And I feel like I'm going to kill myself because I feel like I'm missing
somebody
else that's super important. Oh, the girl played my mom, Christina Wayborn. She is a Bond girl from the movie Octopussy.
Oh, wow.
And even our sound design guy won 7 Grammys.
This is, like you said, this is a dream team. You're hopefully to get one person that's kind of like really ingrained in the Hollywood. You got like, what, 7, 8?
Yeah, and they're all, like, a bunch of them are coming out. And I remember when I was on set, my assistant director had to pull me away because I was just going around like acknowledging everybody because I was just so blown away. Like, thank you, thank you. And she's like, you have to go act. We have a film to make.
So real quick, so tell everybody what the, especially Cam, about giving it away, because I know people want to see tomorrow, the little plot, the log line, I guess. I'm a screenwriter, so I've been, so I've been doing a lot of that for a while. So I've been, you know how Hollywood is, ups and downs. Yeah, they want to make your movie. They don't want to make your movie. They closed up shop. They're no longer around anymore.
Yeah.
But tell me like kind of like what the, just to get people out there, the kind of log line for Americana.
So Americana is a neo-Western, kind of like if you were to take Yellowstone and Sons of Anarchy. And I play a military vet, ex-Army Ranger, who is living out in the desert. taking care of my mother, who's very sick, and I'm dealing with a very terrible loss, which is my daughter, whom I love, and it was my whole life. And so you're sort of seeing this broken man, and I kind of blame my brother for it, which you kind of learn in the story. And then my co-star plays an indigenous girl who lives on the reservation, who's a social worker. And in this town, there's a huge kidnapping to sex trafficking problem. So it's an anti-sex trafficking film in the sense of, like, you know, we are telling the story of these real people and the real experiences. We didn't want to do this big over-the-top action spectacle. We wanted it to be a little bit more just real. And all of it's based on real stories that we found in researching the film. And so you follow Jack's character and June, the social worker, and this sort of family dynamic as it unfolds. And my character rides a motorcycle. In this community, actually, where I went and did research, a lot of people didn't have money for cars, so they rode bikes, you know. And there was a whole motorcycle community, and especially in the vet world, like, motorcycle, I think, is a way for them to get space mentally, you know.
Yeah.
And have sort of a way to, you know, for mental health, have an escape. And so I wanted to have all those aspects in there. But the truth of everything was very important to me. So I try to base every scene off real things. Like, even my character, I learned the exercises that character would do for that military branch. And I started doing those for a year before.
Oh, wow.
So that my muscles would form in the same way as the character. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a very long log line.
But. No, yeah, that's more of like the synopsis, but we're good here. We got some time, right? So we have Carissa Winters here. She's been doing a lot of great stuff for the Film Fest. Tomorrow night, what time is the screening for Americana?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. Okay, good. And then the festival is going to be all weekend long, so it's going to be some great stuff going on. I know, what was that? 5 p.m. Kickoff parties at 5 p.m. Then Saturday and Sunday there's events. So just go to VivaTexasFilmFestival.com for all the information. Right.
You want to talk about the stunt crew?
Yeah.
Well, talk about the stunt crew. There.
Oh, so at 5 p.m. we happen to have two of the best Harley stunt guys in the world. They're driving here as I'm talking, and they're going to be doing Harley stunts. The city's shutting down a whole street across from the theater on 4th Street. And they're going to be doing wheelies and burnouts and all kinds of crazy things.
Nice. Are you taking part in this? Are you going to be part of the stunt crew?
I'm going to ride up with them.
And then get off?
Yeah. They're still teaching me stunts. I'm still learning wheelies and burnouts. I just don't want to break anything before the event.
Yes.
And then Kara Sudfeld, who's a producer of the film, is going to be singing the national anthem. And then there's a lowrider show. And then everyone goes into the theater where there's going to be a very special performance. And then they're going to be playing Americana.
Great. And now, this is a short film, so how long is the movie about?
20 minutes and 33 seconds.
Okay, you know exactly. That's the, that's the final cut. I made a short film. I have a short film in there called Soul Searching. It's going
to
be on Saturday.
Oh, no way.
And it's kind of weird. It's like you can get more festivals if it's shorter.
Yeah.
But the long cut is always better.
Yeah. That's what I was told. Someone's like, it has to be under 10 minutes. And yeah. I was like, screw that. I'm going to make it. I structure it like a TV show pilot.
Yeah.
So it's 20 minutes because you have your introduction, you build empathy, and then you.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to see your film.
Oh, yeah. If you're around. Yeah, I know you're a busy guy. Here's the big question. So with shorts, there is a category for the Oscars for shorts. Are you going to submit Americana to be, possibly nominated for an Oscar?
Yes. We're actually, we have to get into a certain amount of Oscar qualifying short film festivals.
Okay.
Win a certain amount of awards, and then you can qualify to submit for the Oscars. Although our biggest priority really is to secure the funding for the movie, because we have a movie ready to go. We're going to make an hour and a half feature film.
Oh, of this?
Yeah.
And that was the goal of my movie. I kind of took the plan from Sling Blade. What they did for Sling Blade, Billy Bob Thornton did like a 10-minute short, and they saw it and liked it, so they made the whole movie in the 90s. So it's like, that's what was our thing. I'm just trying to tell you it's a good plan.
Yeah.
Our plan didn't really work out. But it's a good plan to show people what you can do.
Yeah.
And then the bigger
movie. Just to go back to what you're talking about with screenwriting, I think my approach, because I was like, I want to make this movie, I want to be an actor, and I was like, I'm a nobody, so no one is going to care. Like, studios aren't going to be like, cool, here's $5 million. So my approach was, I'm going to do it all. Yeah. I'm going to fundraise. I'm going to write. I'm going to cast it. I'm going to build it. I'm going to turn it into something that people want and build the brand, and then do that a few times until they start coming to me. But I don't want to wait around, because this is going to sound very terrible, and I'll probably get in trouble for this in the future, but my point of view of most of the people in the industry is they have no idea what they're doing.
Possibly. I think you're right about that. But
there are people that are incredible and know what they're doing, and they're inspiring, and they're geniuses, and I very much want to align myself with them, but I just don't really want to rely on anybody. I kind of want to just take charge and you know, push the train forward.
The more self-sufficient you can be. I've been in that situation where I've been up to the big level with the movie, the script being almost bought, and then the company goes out of business or something like that. I mean, just big hype talk. So if you're doing everything yourself and you've done it already, people want to see example or a sizzle reel, what you're giving them with this movie. Now, would you star in the big?
Oh yeah,
the big movie.
Of course.
Yeah, and you would direct the big movie too, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, that's the way to do it.
And that's why I did the short, because you know they're like, "Who are you?" And I'm like, "All right, well,
this is me.
Look what I can do for 15 grand. Imagine I can do with 5 million."
Yeah. So that's great. So best of luck to you on Americana and everything, and hopefully we can trade some screenwriting notes and stuff like that.
I would love that.
Yeah. So
that's what it's about, is connecting with good quality people.
And that's what Carissa did the whole thing for. She did to bring it all to Victoria, Viva Texas Film Festival. And I got to give them props. When I first saw that logo, I was like, man, this thing is like professional and it's great. And
that's a pretty rad logo.
Yeah, it is.
And I might have to get that tattooed.
Well, best of luck on the movie. Like I said, hopefully on the Oscars and all that stuff, it works out. And the film, the feature film, I would love to see the feature film work out for you on this thing.
Oh, yeah. So, same.
Great. Well, thanks, Joshua Schultz, everybody. And the movie is tomorrow just say the festivities start at 5. Just be there at 5 o'clock and see the stunt show and see the movie and be part of everything. VIP tickets you can get at VivaTexasFilmFest.com. So it's all there.
Woo!
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
This has been the Jimbo Podcast. Tune in again next week for another new show. Okay? Bye.